My wife thinks the locked cabinet in the garage holds model airplane parts. It holds Bryn. That is the cleanest way I can say it. If Clara asks why I spend two nights a week out there with the radio low and the door shut, I talk about sanding wings, curing glue, and tiny engines that need patience. I even bought three model airplane kits to make the lie respectable. They sit on the top shelf in their glossy boxes, unopened, while the things that matter wait below them in cotton garment bags. I know the difference between a hobby and a hiding place. On Tuesday evenings, after dinner dishes and our usual half hour of television, I kiss Clara on the forehead and tell her I am going to work on the Spitfire. She smiles without looking away from the crime show. She likes that I have something that is mine. She says it keeps me from answering work emails at midnight. I let her believe that because it is easier than telling the truth. The truth would start with a dress, but it would not end there. My name is Brandon Hale. I am 39, with thick arms from years of installing kitchen cabinets before I moved into project management. My beard comes in dark along my jaw, though gray has started at the chin. My hair is brown and short because I do not know what else to do with it. I have a soft middle I pretend is temporary. My hands are wide, nicked, and dry from habit more than labor now. Bryn has those same hands. She wears burgundy nail polish anyway. The garage smells like cedar shavings, oil, and laundry detergent from the machines by the back wall. I have worked hard to make it look ordinary. Pegboard over the bench, clamps in neat rows, paint cans on one side, labeled storage bins on the other. Anyone looking in would see a man with too many projects and not enough weekends. The cabinet is the only thing that gives me away, if someone knows where to look. It stands under the high window, a gray metal cabinet with a hasp lock I installed myself. Behind a stack of folded shop towels, two dresses hang beside a cream blouse, a black skirt, and a pair of jeans cut for curves I do not have. The lower shelf holds a padded bra, breast forms, three wigs, makeup palettes, cotton pads, perfume, and a small mirror that folds open on a brass hinge. The mirror is the most dangerous thing. Clothes can be explained badly. Makeup can be called a mistake. The mirror knows I return. I unlock the cabinet on Tuesday at 8:16. Clara has gone upstairs to call her sister. Their calls last between 40 minutes and 2 hours, depending on whether Clara's sister is angry at her husband, her boss, or a woman from church who uses too many exclamation marks in group texts. The house settles into its evening noises. Pipes tick, the dishwasher hums, rain taps against the garage door in uneven bursts. I take off my flannel shirt first, then my jeans. I fold them on the stool because ritual keeps panic quiet. The concrete floor chills my bare feet through my socks. I pull on black leggings, then the padded bra, then the cream blouse with pearl buttons. The blouse catches at my shoulders. It always does. I work each button through the hole with care. The wig comes last. Tonight I choose the auburn one, shoulder length, with loose waves that frame my face better than I deserve. I secure it with pins, then sit at the bench and do my makeup under the task lamp. Foundation first, concealer under the eyes, a little contour along the jaw, mascara, carefully, eyeliner, less carefully. Clara would laugh if she saw the left eye. It always gets away from me. When I add lipstick, Bryn arrives by degrees, not all at once. I do not transform like a movie scene. I fuss. I wipe a smudge. I mutter when the wig slips. I adjust the blouse over the forms and stand too stiffly until I remember to breathe. Then I look in the mirror and the room changes size. Bryn is not beautiful in any easy way. She has my jaw, softened by makeup but still present. She has my shoulders, hidden by fabric but not erased. She has my careful eyes. She looks like a woman who learned herself in secret and still checks the door. I touch the mirror's edge with one finger. "Hi," I say. The word comes out in my voice. I do not pitch it high. I tried that once and hated the cartoon sound of it. Bryn speaks quietly, with the same throat and different permission. For an hour, I do nothing dramatic. I sit at the bench and brush the wig. I test eyeshadow on the back of my hand. I walk from the cabinet to the laundry machines and back, learning how the leggings move. Sometimes I put on music and sway beside the lawnmower, ridiculous and private. The unopened model airplane boxes watch from the shelf. The first time I dressed in the garage, I did it badly and with no plan. Clara had gone to Cincinnati for her cousin's wedding. I stayed home because a water line had burst at one of our job sites, which was true enough to save me from a weekend of hotel carpets and family gossip. On Saturday night, after 3 takeout tacos and 2 beers, I carried a paper shopping bag into the garage and locked the door. The bag held a blue sundress from a thrift store, a drugstore lipstick, and a wig that looked soft on the package and stiff on my head. I had bought everything in separate places, as if splitting the purchases could split the meaning. I remember standing barefoot on the concrete while the dress twisted around my shoulders. I remember the zipper catching halfway up my back. I remember laughing once, not because anything was funny, but because laughter seemed safer than the sound I almost made. When I finally faced the small mirror above the utility sink, I saw a frightened man in a dress that did not fit. Then I saw something else. Not a finished person, not a revelation with clean edges, just a possibility looking back through bad lipstick and cheap hair. I stayed there for 20 minutes, one hand on the sink, afraid to move because movement might ruin it. After that, the garage changed. I bought a better mirror and told Clara it helped with detailed work. I bought storage bags and said they were for keeping sawdust off projects. I bought the cabinet after Clara nearly opened a plastic bin looking for Christmas lights. That was the week I named Bryn. I tried other names first. Brenda felt like an aunt who smoked on porches. Brooke sounded like someone who knew how to order wine. Bridget was too formal, Bree too young. Bryn came from nowhere I could identify. It looked tidy on a label and sounded like a breath cut short. I wrote it once on a scrap of painter's tape and stuck it inside the cabinet door. Bryn. For months, that tiny strip of tape was the only place the name existed outside my head. Sometimes I opened the cabinet just to see it. Sometimes that was all I did. I would stand there in my work clothes, smell the cedar blocks I hung to protect the dresses, and let the name do what it could. It did not solve me. It gave me one honest word. I bought the first one 3 years ago, after Clara asked why I kept vanishing into the garage. "You building something out there?" she asked. I had been washing a coffee mug. The question struck me so hard I dropped the sponge into the sink. "Thinking about getting back into models," I said. "Models? Airplanes. I did them as a kid." That was half true. I built one plane at 12. My father said I used too much glue and threw it away after the wing sagged. I remembered the smell more than the plane. Clara liked the idea. "That sounds good for you," she said. "Something with your hands." The next day, I bought the Spitfire kit, then a Mustang, then a small biplane with red wings. I learned enough language to sound convincing. Scale, fuselage, decals, primer, weathering. I watched videos while lying beside Clara in bed, holding the phone low against my chest. The videos did not bore me. They made me sad. Those men had hobbies they could film. I had a locked cabinet. At 9:30, Clara knocks on the garage door. I freeze with a lipstick brush in my hand. The knock is light, familiar, 2 taps, then 1. Clara does that when she does not want to startle me, which makes everything worse. "Bryn," she calls through the door. My legal name is Brandon, but Clara calls me Bryn when she wants something small. A jar opened, a light bulb changed, a kiss before bed. "Yeah?" I answer, too loud. "Do we have another roll of paper towels out there?" My heart starts beating in my neck. I look around the garage as if the room might hide me from itself. The cabinet stands open, makeup covers the bench, my jeans are folded on the stool. I am wearing a blouse Clara has never seen, and lipstick the color of dried cherries. "I can bring one in," I say. I am already at the door. The knob turns. I move before thought. I shove the makeup palette into the drawer. The lipstick brush rolls off the bench. I grab my flannel and hold it against my chest, which is somehow more incriminating than doing nothing. "Wait," I say. The knob stops. On the other side, Clara says nothing. The rain taps the garage door. The task lamp buzzes above the bench. "Just a second," I say. "Bren," Clara says, "is everything okay?" I hear worry first. Not suspicion, not anger, worry. Clara is good at worry because she makes it practical. She carries cough drops in her purse. She checks tire pressure before trips. She remembers which pills her mother takes and which ones her mother forgets. I look at the mirror. Bryn looks back at me with Clara's flannel crushed against her blouse. I could change fast. I could say glue spilled. I could tell Clara to wait and then wipe my face raw. I have done versions of that for years. My hand reaches for a makeup wipe. Then Clara says softer, "You sound scared." That stops me. I am not afraid of Clara. I am afraid of the space between what she knows and what is true. I am afraid that if she steps into it, the floor will break under both of us. "I am," I say. The door remains closed. Clara's voice changes. She is standing close now, maybe with her forehead near the wood. "Do you want me to go away?" "Yes," I think. "No," I think. "I don't know," I say. A long pause follows. Clara does not fill it. She has lived with me for 11 years, so she knows my silences have furniture in them. She waits while I trip over every chair. "Are you hurt?" she asks. "No." "Is there another person in there?" "No." "Did you break something expensive?" I almost laugh. The sound comes out crooked. "No." "Then we can probably survive it." I close my eyes. The line is so Clara that it hurts. We can probably survive it. Not comfort, exactly. A repair estimate. "I have lied to you," I say. The door goes quiet enough that I hear the refrigerator inside the house kick on. "About what?" Clara asks. "The airplanes." "The airplanes," she repeats. "I do not build them." Another pause. "Okay. I bought the kits as a cover." "For what?" My mouth dries. I could name the clothes. I could name the makeup. I could name Bryn. Each option feels like picking up a live wire. "For me," I say. The sentence makes no sense. It makes too much sense. Clara does not answer right away. I picture her outside the door in pajama pants and one of my old sweatshirts, hair twisted into a knot, paper towel mission forgotten. "Can I come in?" she asks. My body says no, so hard my knees lock. "I look different," I say. "Different how?" "Like someone I have not told you about." The knob does not move. Clara keeps her hand still. That patience makes the shame sharper. "Bren," she says, "I am going to ask one question. Do you want me to see you?" The answer should be simple. It is not. I want Clara to see me and never change her face. I want her to see me and understand without asking for a vocabulary I do not own. I want her to go upstairs and let me fold Bryn back into the cabinet so tomorrow can be normal. I also do not want normal, if normal means this locked room forever. "I want to stop lying," I say. "That is not the same answer," Clara says. "It is the only one I have." She breathes out. I hear it through the door. "Then open it when you can," she says. "I will wait in the kitchen." Her footsteps move away. I stand in the garage with the flannel in my hands and the door still closed. I expected Clara to push. I expected questions. I expected the quick injury of surprise. Instead, she left me with the decision, which feels cruel, until I understand it is not. She has not forced the door. I have to choose it. For 10 minutes, I do nothing. The lipstick brush lies on the concrete near my foot. The cabinet door hangs open. Rain runs in small rivers down the outside of the garage window. Then I put down the flannel. I pick up the brush, clean the tip, and finish my lips. Not because I feel brave, because if Clara is going to meet Bryn, I do not want Bryn introduced as an accident. I fix the left eyeliner as well as I can. I smooth the blouse. I take off my socks and put on low black flats from the cabinet. My feet look strange in them, long and pale, but the shoes help me stand differently. At the door, my hand stops on the knob. I think of the model airplanes on the shelf. Three boxes full of pieces waiting for a man who never intended to assemble them. I think of all the little terms I learned to protect myself. Fuselage, decals, weathering. Then I open the door. The kitchen light feels brighter than the task lamp. Clara sits at the table with two mugs of tea. She looks up when I step inside. For 1 second, Clara's face opens in surprise. I see it. I cannot pretend I do not. Her eyes move over the wig, the makeup, the blouse, the shape of my chest, the black flats. Her mouth parts. One hand tightens around her mug. I almost turn back. Clara sets the mug down with care. Okay, she says. The word is not approval. It is not rejection. It is a hand placed on the table between us. This is Bryn, I say. Clara looks at my face again. Bryn? Yes. How long? I take the chair across from her, because standing feels like an audition. The vinyl seat is cold through the leggings. Since before we met, I say. Clara's eyes close for a moment. When she opens them, they shine, but no tears fall. Before we married? Yes. Before I told you all my ugly things? That lands harder than any accusation. Clara told me about her first marriage on our fourth date. She told me about the debt, the drinking, the night she slept in her car outside a grocery store because she was too ashamed to call her mother. She had trusted me with the parts of herself she did not polish. I had given her a man with a locked cabinet. Yes, I say. Clara nods slowly. That hurts. I know. Do you? I start to answer, then stop. I do not get to be efficient here. I know I hurt you, I say. I do not know what it feels like from your side. She looks down at her tea. That is better. The kitchen smells of peppermint and rain. The dishwasher has finished. A blue light glows on the panel. The crime show still murmurs in the living room, forgotten. Are you a woman? Clara asks. The question is quiet and direct. I fold my hands in my lap. The nail polish gleams under the kitchen light. I do not know how to answer that. Try badly. That sounds like Clara, too. My throat tightens. I am your husband, I say. I know that is not enough of an answer. I do not think Bryn is pretend. I do not think she is all of me either. When I dress this way, I feel less like I am carrying my body around as a job. Clara listens. Her face has gone still, but not cold. Is it sexual? She asks. No, I say, then correct myself, because simple answers can still be evasive. Not mostly. Not the way you mean. It is not about sneaking away from you for that. It is about being allowed to be soft somewhere. Clara's mouth tightens. With me, you were not allowed? I did not know how. That is a different thing. Yes. She rubs the bridge of her nose. I feel stupid. You are not. Do not tell me what I feel. I close my mouth. Clara takes a sip of tea, then makes a face because it has gone too hot or too cold. I bought you magnifying lamps for your birthday. I use them. For eyeliner? Sometimes. The corner of her mouth moves despite herself. It is not a smile she wants me to enjoy. I do not. I told my brother you were building a plane, she says. I am sorry. He asked if you were going to hang it from the ceiling when you finished. I remember. I told him you probably would. Her eyes fill then. She wipes under one eye with the heel of her hand, quick and irritated. I made room in our life for a man building a plane, she says. You were building a person. The sentence cuts cleanly because it is true and not true enough. Bryn was already there, I say. I was building a way to visit her. Clara looks at me for a long time. That is the first thing tonight that sounds like you. I do not know whether she means Brandon or Bryn. Maybe she does not either. We sit until the tea stops steaming. Clara asks practical questions, because that is how she approaches a cracked pipe, a sick parent, and now this. Does anyone else know? No. Do I go out like this? No. Do I want to? I do not know. Am I planning to leave her? No. Have I lied about money? Only small amounts for clothes and makeup, which is still lying. Do I want her to call me Bryn? Not all the time. Maybe sometimes. Not tonight, unless she wants to try. She absorbs each answer with the same careful face. At one point, she stands, walks to the garage door, and looks inside. I stiffen, but she only sees the bench, the lamp, the open cabinet, the model airplane boxes on the shelf. Show me the Spitfire, she says. The kit? Yes. I follow her into the garage and take the box from the shelf. Dust coats the top. I wipe it with my sleeve, then realize I have just smeared dust on the blouse. Clara notices. Her mouth moves again. Do not laugh, I say. I am not. You are near it. I am near a lot of things. Fair. I set the box on the bench and open it. Plastic pieces sit sealed in bags. The instruction booklet lies flat and untouched. Clara picks it up and studies the diagrams. You really never started, she says. No. Why keep buying them? Proof. For me? For both of us. Clara sets the booklet down. That is sad, Bren. I know. No, she says. I mean, the kits are sad, this whole little museum of fake propellers. I laugh before I can stop myself. It breaks out rough and too loud. Clara looks startled, then she laughs too, just once. The sound does not fix anything. It makes the room less airless. She reaches toward the cabinet, then stops. May I? I nod. Clara opens the garment bag and touches the sleeve of the burgundy dress. Her fingers move over the fabric the way they move through racks at department stores, testing texture before price. This is pretty, she says. It was on clearance. Of course it was. I am still me. The words leave me without planning. Clara keeps her hand on the sleeve. I know. Then she looks at me. I also do not know, she says. Both are true. I nod, because I can live with that better than false certainty. Near midnight, Clara says she needs to sleep. Her face looks tired in a way I put there. We stand between the kitchen and the garage, not touching. What happens tomorrow? I ask. We go to work, she says. I pretend not to be furious during my morning meeting. You probably research something anxiously. Probably. Then we talk again after dinner. Okay. She hesitates. I do not want you to put Bryn back in the cabinet and act like tonight did not happen. My eyes sting. I thought you might. Part of me does, Clara says. That part is loud. I am not letting it drive. I look down at my black flats. Thank you. Do not thank me yet. Okay. She starts toward the stairs, then stops and turns back. Can I ask one more thing? Yes. When you are out there as Bryn, are you lonely? The garage waits behind me, full of tools, fabric, lies, and one open box of airplane parts. Yes, I say. Clara nods. She looks as if the answer hurts her more than she expected. Good night, Bryn. The name crosses the kitchen softly. I grip the doorframe. Good night, Clara, I say. She goes upstairs. I stay below until I hear the bedroom door close. Then I return to the garage. For once, I do not rush to undress. I sit at the bench in the task lamp's yellow light and look at the open Spitfire box. The pieces are still there, clean and separate, waiting for glue, paint, pressure, patience. I take the first sheet of plastic parts from its bag. The wings are smaller than my palm. Fragile, yes, but not useless. I read the first instruction twice, then snap the first piece free. Maybe I will build the plane after all. Not as proof, not as cover, just because it has waited long enough, and so have I. Before I turn off the lamp, I take the painter's tape from inside the cabinet door and stick it on the edge of the bench. Bryn's name sits in plain sight, small and blue, beside the first plastic wing. It looks less like a secret there. It looks like a start. I leave it there where Clara can see it.